Lupus LA would like to thank our generous sponsors for their support of the Your Story, Our Fight podcast. Gemini Beauty believes in beauty for a cause, and in their case, the cause is lupus. The team at Gemini is changing the skincare game for good. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Lupus LA podcast, Your Story, Our Fight. I'm your host, Adam Selkowitz, and as I always do at the top of every podcast, I want to thank our incredible sponsors for their generosity and allowing us to tell these amazing lupus stories. And today we are talking to Donna Jordan, and this is a lupus story I've wanted to share with our audience for such a long time, not just because her son is on every podcast over my shoulder, but because she is an amazing woman, an artist, a mother of three, a grandmother of two, and just has an amazing spirit, which you're about to hear. So welcome to the podcast, Donna.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this as well. So I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. So tell me, I know you grew up on the East Coast. Tell me a little bit about your childhood, about sort of your life before the lupus diagnosis.
Remember those wonderful times. No, but the life before my lupus diagnosis was just very busy. At that time, my children were young in school, you know, different ages. There's about a 3-year difference between my first two, and then there was, you know, 6 years when I had my youngest. So there was a gap there as far as, let's say, if there is ever a continuity in rearing your children. But I was very much a very active mother, just an activist in the community. My husband and I both were very, very active in our children's lives in the way of making sure, you know, as much as we can that we expose to them, you know, them as much as we can. Prior to, let's say, even being married or what have you, a life as an artist was very, was everything about my life, you know? So it was just a very exciting sort of period of time. I was in California for quite a few years, probably about 10 or 11. And from 74, we won't go all through that, but I was in California living the artist life. It was a lot of things that were going on that I was able to participate in and to help strengthen my prowess as an artist and what have you. And pretty much that, just a busy, active person. Just
and then so tell me where you were in your life. What were you doing when you started to have symptoms? I know your diagnosis came fairly quickly. I mean, you had a fairly quick diagnosis once you started having issues, but what were the first signs that something wasn't right?
It was very odd too at that time. I might have, even now that I know what the symptoms were or the indicators, you know, are, I might have been experiencing some of it even before I was actually diagnosed. But I had an accident on the beach where, you know, an object, I will say, was in the water, and it was hurled into my knee, and my knee sort of bent backwards, you know, and rushed to the hospital. That was a very interesting sort of situation, being rushed off the beach to the nearest hospital. To find out that I had torn my ACL, then had an operation to repair that. I was on pain medication. Once the pain medication, sort of as I was weaning off of that, I started, you know, it was almost like overnight, I'm trying to get out of bed in the middle of the night, and I'm putting my hands down to, you know, lift myself out of the bed. And the most excruciating pain that I had ever felt, you know, was over my whole body, everything I touched, everything I moved. Tried to move my body, trying to lift any kind of weight on any of my extremities was extreme pain. So the next day I go to the doctor to find out what's happening, what's going on. And He was very astute in diagnosing. He said, you know, I really think you must have lupus. He said, you know, because all the things that you're describing to me, sort of, you know. And he had been my doctor for quite a few years. He was from Nigeria. And I sort of was amazed that, number one, that he was able to diagnose something so quickly just from me telling him a few things about my symptoms, but also that I had never heard of this before. You know, lupus is something, you know, so very new.
Yeah. So what was your reaction to that? I mean, prior to this diagnosis, you're running on the beach, you're, you know, all of a sudden that's a pretty life-changing shift.
It was, it truly was. And at that time too, you know, I had a lot of balls in the air. I was juggling quite a few things. So that shift was just devastating for the entire family. Luckily enough, I was living next door to my mother, because after getting diagnosed, there was a period of testing in labs that, you know, transacted in between the time I was feeling extreme pain, and he said, I think this might be lupus, and to the confirmation where everything lined up that is indeed what I had. And during that period of time was a very traumatic period for me and the family, because I was bedridden. I had temperatures of 105, you know, it sort of like kept climbing day by day, and just being completely like just listless. It was a horrible thing. So no one knew, because of course my family also had no clue. It was like, what's wrong with mom? You know, it was the Energizer Bunny, as you know, like kind of perked out on us.
And how old were the kids at this time?
Oh, the kids. So this was in 1997. So please don't let me do the math, but I want to sort of my youngest was five, and then there was Mike 11, and then Jamila probably around 13.
Got it.
Around those eight.
So they need that's when they need a mom who's running around doing all sorts of stuff, right?
Oh my goodness, it was just unreal. Exactly. So, you know, my husband and my sister, my mom sort of, you know, came in to, of course, you know what I mean? We're a very close-knit family, to help me, you know, navigate their lives. So it wouldn't be so impactful for them. Just did not want them to be so, you know, exposed to the trauma of it all. You know what I mean? Because they're seeing me later in bed and they're like not understanding any of it. So it was pretty rough.
And so then you get the diagnosis, the official confirmation of the diagnosis, and the treatment starts, I assume. And then what's sort of the transition there?
Well, the treatment started, and of course, as you know, prednisone was the main and only, you know, medication that was prescribed to sort of assist me with this issue, with the problem. And the amounts that I was taking was pretty extensive. I think at that time it was 60 milligrams a day. And my body went through an enormous transformation, as far as, you know, pillow face. And I was laughing at pillow body. I mean, it did not miss a spot. I was just head blown up. Mm-hmm. And so therefore my mobility was then challenged even more. Still, even with medication, you still are experiencing the pain and discomfort and fatigue of it all.
What's your mental state at this point in terms of your, I mean, I know you are an incredibly resilient person, but I want to know what the Donna of 1997 was like when all of a sudden everything sort of came to a halt.
Moment's notice, run to the internet, get on Google, try to find out, what is this lupus thing? What does it really do? What are my options? How am I going to feel? What is the long term of it? You know, I for some reason, you just put all that stock and that information you get on the internet. And they gave me a diagnosis of 5 years to live, 10 years to live. So at that point, you think about your family. What would they do without you? How are they going to survive? It's not even about you so much. It's about everybody else that interacts. So I then brought this to my doctor. And of course, the diagnosis is devastating. It is honestly, I have always been a very healthy person. You know, of course, you know, little weight up and down and that sort of thing, the normal things of life. But I really not been a kind person that had to go to the doctors. I had no other things that were wrong with me. So to have this type of diagnosis was, I believe, even more devastating for me than I really realized, because now I had to go to the doctor every month. Now I had to get lab work, you know, on a regular basis, and found out that the type of lupus that I had also affected my blood. So blood thinners were also prescribed. So there was a lot of things that had to be adjusted to my lifestyle in order to really be able to survive with this type of diagnosis. The fatigue level. I'm just not a person that likes to ask for help. I'm independent. I'm the one who gives the help. I'm the one who pushes and make things sort of happen. So I now also had to sit back and say, okay, you can't do this. You can't do what you used to do. And that was a whole lifestyle change, which was major for me with children and an artist.
And so who was there for you emotionally? How did you manage that?
My mother was, God rest her soul, was very, very supportive of me. She would help me with my children. She lived next door to me, which was wonderful. My sister, my family, of course, my husband had to sort of supplement the children's care in a way that he was not necessarily used to doing. At this time, he was working nights. So that's a whole different scenario that happens when you're dealing with children, what have you, because, you know, it's sort of like a flip, you know, when he sleeps during the day and, you know, where the kids are active and what have you. And then at night, you know, he's not there. I'm taking the other rein. But it's just, it was the support of that. It was the support of my faith, honestly, and level of spirituality that I knew and had always been indoctrinated with the knowledge that your mind, that you can sort of overcome anything. You are never given more than what you can handle. So that support and knowing that I would be okay and we would make it through, that helped push me through. Don't get me wrong. Yes, there were many, many days of sorrow, despair, grief, all of those things moving forward. And as you can kind of imagine with children at that age, at those ages, that you also turn into an actor, so to speak, because they will pick up in a minute your mood, your feelings, your whatever you're going through. So I had to always pretend or act like I was better than I actually felt. So it was... it was faith in knowing that we would be okay and I would be able to make it through.
Tell me a little bit about how art helped you manage lupus?
Art was the one thing that I was able to maintain on a different level, but still be able to. My artwork got a lot smaller, whereas I was working on 5 foot by 4 feet paintings, murals, and it got condensed down to smaller pieces of artwork where I was able to manage it a lot better in that sense. So art was a space where you can release your worries, put your feelings into your work. And without art, I don't know what my other avenues would have been for support. But it was, it definitely helped me refocus my energy and to sort of help guide me through. Along with the children, everything else is just even those small spots of time that I had to create and work just was everything.
So one of the things you've done through Lupus LA is you've brought art as a healing mechanism to other lupus patients, and which I thought was a really beautiful program that we've done and that we're going to do more of. Tell me a little bit about what it means to give back to other lupus patients now that you have sort of a better understanding of your illness.
It's my warm spot because had I had probably the same level of advocacy for me at that time, I might have been able to navigate a little bit better through. So being able to extend an avenue or open up a door for lupus patients, and it just so happens it was mostly women because I was advocating along those lines for my sister artists out there who were afflicted with with lupus, and working with Susan, who allowed me the space and even gave me the idea that, you know, we can funnel some of this energy towards other women who also were artists and who are suffering in the way of not knowing how to apply their art or letting their art still be part of their life and expression, even though lupus makes you fatigued and tired. You can't, arthritic sometimes in your joints where you can't hold your brushes and you can't, let's say, work the same way you used to. But that let's see if we can help with them, at least just give them a taste of what it could be, and they can go ahead and take it and pursue it a little bit further. So it was brilliance. It was brilliance. And now, especially moving through these times that we're in where everyone is a little bit more homebound for one reason or another, being able to come into people's homes and share the art space with them, you know, it means quite a bit to me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the rest of the family, the activism that you have inspired amongst them. And so we'll be right back with more from Donna Jordan.
Lupus LA's Facebook Live Chat series connects leading lupus and health experts with our community to answer the most current and important questions. For more information, visit lupusla.org.
We are back on the Lupus LA podcast, Your Story, Our Fight. I'm your host, Adam Selkowitz, and we are talking to the illustrious Donna Jordan. Donna, you have three incredible kids, all successful in their own right. You probably people are most familiar with Michael. And I just, my story and how I was introduced to you and your family, Michael came to us many years ago before Fruitvale Station was unveiled to the world. So this is a long time ago. And he had an incredible determination to help his mom. And he knew, I've never met an actor who was so confident that he was going to have so much success. And he knew that that success was going to enable him to be a voice. And his mission, he told me, was, I want to be a voice for my mom, and I want to be a voice for other lupus patients. And we worked together and created MBJM and other programs. And Michael has been one of the foremost ambassadors for Lupus LA, and a good friend to me, to the organization. And his heart for you and for lupus is so important to our cause. And so how proud are you? First of all, where did that come from in Michael? Because I know it came from you. I know it came from Michael A. But tell me how proud you are of him. And you know, your other kids have been right there as well.
There are really no words to express, you know, how happy I am that they have this advocacy and passion for helping others sort of instilled in them. True, I believe that most of it comes from them watching how me and my husband work with community and family and helping even their friends in that space as well, to see the benefit and how much it helps and how important it is to help each other in that way. Whatever we can do, truly instilling in them as well that that is why I truly believe we're here. That's what, as humans, that is our responsibility and that is our task. To, yes, pursue our lives, but if we do not pass it on, pay it forward, the graces that we are given from time to time, but also do our part to share that in the ways that are most meaningful and do it from your heart, not expecting anything back, but to help and to push forward and to give some sort of inspiration to those who might not have been graced with us with the blessings that we have in that sense. So all of them in their way, Michael, because he is or had most of the, let's say, limelight or attention as being the face in celebrity in that world, it was really instrumental, as you say, to so many people to have someone this young advocating for his mother and for this cause, which was not very popular. A lot of people just did not know about it. So that really, really helped a lot. My daughter, her as well, from a different aspect, also contributed to helping, you know, advocacy for lupus and me. She worked with me and Susan with the art program that we were doing, the art, power of art, and giving us ideas, giving us also, you know, the younger point of view of how we can sort of spread the word a little bit more and be more of an advocate. And my youngest is just that support that was always right there by him being the youngest. He was sort of in my realm a little bit closer and tighter than the other two, and saw firsthand my situation and seeing what I was going through, and therefore inspiring me and not letting me drop the ball, not letting me kind of shy away from doing different things, and giving me also the courage to push forward in this way of advocacy.
Yeah, they're amazing kids, So tell me, I know when that spotlight was shone down on your story through Michael's involvement, it became a giant spotlight. But I know that has led you to meet some incredible people. And what has that meant to you to be able to reach so many lupus patients by sharing your story?
Well, you know, it was a thing where I had no idea how widespread a interview with you being put on the internet, how it could have reached so many people. I do remember an MB Jam at Dave & Buster's that we had, and always participating in whatever I could, but not realizing that after that was put on the internet, that so many people actually recognized me and was affected by my story. And I felt like a rock star. Everyone was coming up. It was younger people, older people. The younger people, I was really not aware that so many younger women were struggling with how do I move through with my life. At this point, I've had 3 children. I've traveled. I've done things. You know, they're just starting off on their life's journey. You know, can I have children? Can I travel? Can I get immunizations because I want to go to different countries and visit? You know, those basic life questions, how do I deal with these things, with the fatigue I'm feeling and the pain I'm having? So to see them come and actually ask me for my opinion and ask me what my journey was about, and me being able to inspire them and encourage them that through Lupus LA, they could have all the resources that they need to do whatever they needed to do and have all their questions answered. So it was, you know, great. It was, you know, a perfect way to introduce.
Now, and what do you think, what's the most important thing you tell a new lupus patient who approaches you?
It's hard to say. It depends on how they come to me or where they are in their journey with it. So it's not a one piece of information that kind of works for all of them. I kind of feel their energy and I kind of touch them where they are, mostly just to be encouraged and not to let the diagnosis of having this condition stop your dreams, stop the path that you're on. We have to make adjustments. And in life, it could be anything. You never know. It just happens to be lupus. It could be a fall down the stairs, not trying to be, you know, dark or anything. But there's right. So many things that can happen to you that will take you off of your path and journey. This is just happens to be lupus. So therefore, there are, especially now, so many things that you can do to help you through your journey. I found that diet was a big major thing, which I had not been aware of at that time, that certain, you know, restrictions, you find out what's good for you. I was like, nightshade. What is a nightshade? Vegetable. And, you know, I was like, oh, no, not no more eggplant parmesan. It's different things that those little small adjustments that you make, you know, here and there that will help you feel better, that help you move through. And you have to do the research and you and whatever information I have, if I don't have it for them, because sometimes I am limited with what the information that I can give them. I can give them hope. I can give them inspiration. And I can surely guide them to the right people who can give them what they need to push through with this.
Well, now that you mentioned diet, my wife is going to say, see, I told you, I told you. That's what she says all the time. So I put my fingers in my ears. Exactly. But it's
my husband
does
as well. I mean, he's an advocate for eating right and exercise and that sort of thing. Yeah. So as everything, and as the more we learn, because I'm telling you, every day that we move, I find there's something that's better for you than another. Certain things that I thought were horrible for you actually kind of help. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, so
yeah. Chocolate.
Coffee. I'm just saying, yes, it's just, right. There are different things that we learn as we go, but, and usually I just try to also bring light to it because I tried to raise the doom and gloom of it all and let them reflect on me, if nothing else. Yes, I've had this for, you know, some 20, 2-3 years, having thought in the beginning that it was something that I was, that my life expectancy was going to be 5 or 10 years. I'm just saying you cannot always listen. And it's, you know, I can give you some levity to how you're feeling about it.
What does that mean to you now that you, you know, you've outlived the internet predictions from 1997 right. or whatever it was, and you've, you know, you've come so far, and the medicine has come so far. And so what does that mean to you, you know, to see your grandkids and to, you know, how has your perspective changed?
It has been immense. Just saying that grandchildren just change your life anyway, once you have these little ones, mm-hmm. and it gives you a different perspective on that you have to be there for them. You have to keep pushing towards that. So it means so much to know that through guidance, faith, and the right pattern and the right routines, you know, will make all the difference in the world. And I was talking the other day to a friend of mine explaining that I sort of backslid, as you would say, a little bit. I was in remission for a good 3 years. I was able to be completely off of prednisone, which helped a lot with, you know, my physicality, you know, as far as eating and that sort of thing. And just little by little started, you know, not hanging out, but going out with the ladies, out to dinner, have a drink, maybe eating more sweets than I needed to, and not staying on the path. And, you know, sure enough, you know, my body started saying, letting me know that, this is not a thing that you could just hop in and out of. You got to be a little bit, you know, you have to be consistent and stay the course and path. So in that as well, this journey has also taught me that you have to have a level of consistency and you have to stay. And I believe that's with anything, probably. You know, we all have to watch, you know, what we, especially as we grow older, we have to be more conscientious about what we put in our bodies. But even with lupus patients, you can't let, you know, a few maybe months, years, or whatever of feeling great and wonderful say, okay, now I can go back to the way I was eating and doing before. Now I have to stick with it. So I also had a serious wake up call, and now I am back on the path of, you know, doing what I need to do. And those grandchildren are truly an inspiration to, that's giving me the power to stick and do what I need to do to be here for them.
Amazing. So tell me, what's next from a advocacy awareness? Like, where do you want to go next with your sort of mission to help lupus patients?
I would like to do a little bit more of the artistic sort of offerings that I can sort of come up with for other lupus patients, and working with Lupus LA and the Power of Art. I'd like to start doing maybe, you know, some art videos, you know, where we sit in our homes and we create some art, and possibly have exhibitions where the artist's work can be displayed and possibly them be able to get some sort of revenue in, because as we get older, as our bodies get a little bit more fragile, working is a bit of a challenge. And for an artist, you usually want to create art and have other people love it and buy it and have that added to your revenue. But you can't do it, you know, when you're hurting and you're having pain. But I'm trying to see if I can carve a road where I can show them where it is possible. We adjust this, we adjust that. Maybe we use new smaller canvases. Maybe we use canvas without the frame, that we can move it wherever we are, be a little bit mobile with it. Maybe we're moving it to our bedrooms and not to a studio. Just sort of different ways, and demonstrate and work with them to give them another path down the art, because that is my that is my path.
Yeah. So tell me, this just occurred to me, and that's maybe a totally odd question, but if you could sum up your lupus journey in the form of art, you know, what does that picture look like to you?
Ooh, you're really getting heavy there.
I know that I confused myself, but I think I can, I know you can answer this because
I feel it.
There's something in there that I'm trying to get to something. Just like, what are the colors? What are the, you know, what does it feel like to be a lupus patient for so many years? What does that picture look like?
It's interesting. I actually have a picture that sort of reminds me that I did back before I was diagnosed, but it was a different set of circumstances that inspired this work. But there was a sort of aspect of at the bottom where it was colors of brown and colors of grays and colors of shades of black and that sort of thing. And then it sort of ombre'd up into brightness and lightness at the top of the painting. There was a bird at the bottom. It was figures of despair. So I believe that piece would be that no matter how gray your area might be or my area was, I was able to slowly ombre up into lightness and brightness and just happiness.
See, I knew exactly where we were going.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. No, I knew it. I felt it. All right. So Donna, thank you so much. Donna Jordan, you are an amazing person. I love you. Lupus LA loves you. And I know this podcast is going to hit so many people in the right place at the right time. And I really appreciate you taking
please,
the time
I
to
am
do it.
Just honored. And it was interesting. I think it was a little known fact that I didn't realize that in the beginning when I had no idea about lupus. And, you know, it was also a situation where you buy that very unique car, or so you think, and you customize it and it's just perfect. And then you go out on the street and you see four other ones going down the street and you're just like, okay, same old car. And same thing with lupus. I thought I was very unique in it. And I was watching a PSA one day and I saw Jesse Norman, the opera singer, talking about the fact that she had lupus. And I was like, this must be kind of, you know, kind of well known because she's up here doing that. And then I found out that we were connected so much earlier than we even realized, you know, as divine intervention would have.
Yep. And to bring it full circle, my dad and his ad agency did that PSA.
See,
in the 90s.
Amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. And it's, and it just lets me know that we were meant to connect in this way. And we did it without even knowing it a generation ago and or years ago, what have you. And now look at us now. And we are so much further now than we were then. And I am so happy for having Lupus LA to be able to channel my energy and my situation and give me the resources that I need. And I thank you so much.
On behalf of the entire team at Lupus LA, we thank you for joining the Your Story, Our Fight podcast. Please tune in, spread the word, and come back for more inspiring lupus stories. I'm your host, Adam Selkowitz, wishing you good health, and to always remember, your story is our fight.